guys, Jack here. I hope you guys are having a good WSOP, whether you are in Vegas like Zach or stuck at home like myself. But if you want to sweat Zach and the rest of the Just Hands team that's in Vegas, follow us on Just Hands Poker. That's our Snapchat name. It's also our Twitter handle. Both those mediums will be keeping track of our progress. And let's wish Jack some run good for the upcoming events. All right, guys. Thank you for your continued listenership. And enjoy this week's episode. Hey, Zach.
Hey.
I got another listener hand for you.
Wonderful.
This one's actually from Lake Charles. It doesn't say where, but we were recently in Lake Charles on our Just Hands Across America tour. And we didn't find ourselves in a great game, but I really like the Louisiana custom, at least in all the places I played in Louisiana, or in Mississippi for that matter, which is that, well, actually, in Louisiana, it was always you could buy up to the largest stack, and in Mississippi, when I played in Biloxi, you could, all the games were uncapped, even 1-3, which I think is really fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, forgetting about profitability, I think just playing deeper stack poker is just a lot more fun, and I think that they understood that over there.
Yeah, I think there's just a little more energy to the game when, like, there's a lot of money on the table relative to the stakes. Yeah, I mean, I do think, like, having a smaller capped game is probably smart for some casinos, since you're going to get players who will play if they know the max buy-in is 200 big blinds at, like, a 1-2 game. Or, sorry, 100 big blinds at a 1-2 game, but wouldn't want to play, like, in a game where
two,
people
five,
are sitting down. Well, not necessarily 2-5, but wouldn't want to play in a game where people were sitting down with $1,000, even if it's sort of irrational. If they're overemphasizing a lot, you know, the effects of that.
Yeah, and a lot of the rules were like, I think like 50 or 75% of the big stack, but I think practically speaking it was like, you know, 20% more than the big stack. It didn't seem to be strongly enforced at any of the places we played in.
Yeah. There was also some shenanigans going on, like in New Orleans, where apparently when the rule was being enforced, which it wasn't when we were there, but when it was enforced, I guess the regs would normally like do a flip, just like a big $1,000 flip at the beginning, just so someone gets up to like 4K or so, and they go from there.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
That's a pretty tilting way to start a session, though, especially like, you know, if you're playing like 2-5.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know if they settled up after or not. I wouldn't be shocked, but
you're saying if it's like just pros or regs that know each other starting a game and they settle up, that makes sense.
It always surprised me for some reason, like the propensity for professional poker players to enjoy gambling.
Well, you gotta like a little bit if you're gonna do it all the time.
Yeah, but taking a. I assume the house takes the same rake they are always taking out of this flip, so a slightly minus EV play like, is not super appealing to me, but it is.
But it's definitely plus EV, you know.
It's plus EV because of the game circumstances.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to the hand. So this is in Lake Charles, Louisiana. We don't know what casino. For what it's worth, we played at the Golden Nugget, a very nice place, didn't get a chance to go anywhere else. We were just there for one night. And, okay, so our correspondent writes, okay, gents, here is one of the most unique hands I've ever played. Background info on the game. This is from a 1-3 no-limit hold'em game in South Louisiana. I've played in this game frequently, although the table is only about 1-3 regs and a bunch of others I don't recognize. I've been playing for about 9 to 10 hours at this point, and was enjoying one of my better sessions. I was up to about 2,800. My image is that I can have any two cards at any time. All this is mostly due to a bunch of, insert euphemism for bad players here, at the table. The two villains in the hand were at the table with me for the last 5 plus hours, and had seen me shown down crazy things like 9-10 suited on the button, or winning a pot by 3-betting from the small blind with ace-5 suited and flopping a wheel.
I like this guy's style.
Yeah, I haven't actually gotten out of line, and so I think the perception about me is a bit wrong. Yeah, it sounds very wrong so far. My opponents may think I can't fold draws of any kind, etc. Yeah.
Well, Jack and I can definitely relate to this, probably even more so than Jack, this table feeling.
Yeah, a lot of times it's a sign of you're playing better than your opponents when they, at least over certain samples, think you're just a total fish. You should get used to every once in a while when you're playing at a new table, everyone thinks you're a horrible player, and that's probably a good thing. Okay. The game in general is always loose passive, and today is no different. There are always at least 2 to 3 short stackers in the game who buy in for $100 and hope to get to $200 and then leave. Villain 1, short stacker, is one such person. I'd seen him many times before. He buys in for $100, plays super tight, and if he ever gets more than $50, he usually leaves. Or up more than $50. Today was a bit different. Through very tight passive play, though not necessarily bad play per se, he managed to work his stack up to about $400 before getting all in with aces preflop against another regular, who had queens. He was now up to $800 and was starting to rack his chips and count them, about 50 times by my estimation.
Man, that's so awesome when you see people doing that.
At this casino, you cannot play from the rack, but they'll give you about a half orbit of leeway. When the hand in question comes up, he's the effective stack at $800 to $850 and is halfway into racking his chips. A few last notes on the short stacker. I had seen him check back third nut flush on the river, non-paired board, and only 3 spades on the board. Oh, wow. I've seen that shit so many times. I'd only seen him 3-bet preflop one time in 5 hours, and that was the ace's hand. Okay. Villain number 2 is a great guy to play against. Older, very new to the game, and perhaps not even sure what the rules are. I had never seen him before or since, but in the time I'd been there, he had rebought a few times and was probably into this little 1-3 game about $2,000. The rule here is that you can buy in for whatever the max stack at the table is, and so when he bought in the first time, that was close to the $300 starting max buy-in. His last buy-in was for about $1,200, and he was down to about $800 himself as this hand began. He either just liked to see the river or didn't understand that he could fold his hand before. He would literally call the flop and turn action over 90% of the time and very often fold the river. My honest read is that he thought he was playing some kind of table game where you just paid what the dealer told you you had to see all the cards and then he would decide.
For what it's worth, I played with a guy like this only once in my life, and it was in New Orleans just a few days before. Really, really drunk guy that, like, when the dealer has the action on him, he would use like the blackjack, like, kind of hand signals in terms of, like, you know, I don't want a card, I want a card.
That's awesome.
And he wasn't much of a folder, but he would fold on the turn sometimes, but he was not one to fold preflop. If someone like 3-bet for his entire stack, and he bought him for like 100, like 8 times. If someone 3-bet his like entire stack and a preflop, he's like, okay, well, that sucks. I guess I just have to put my money in with whatever hand I have. So
yeah, I've played with a few guys like that. Mostly 1-3, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, that was 1-3.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry for the aside. This sounds awesome. I wish we spent some more time, honestly, in Lake Charles. That game was real good for like a 1-3 on like an off night.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I haven't sat in a bad 1-3 game in a while, but yeah, this is definitely above average. Or it was. And this sounds way above average. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alright, so on to what happens. Oh, okay. Or let's finish this description.
Yeah.
On more than one occasion, with me and others at the table, he would be in the middle of a 3 or 4 bet raising war and just be calling every time. Yeah, so it sounds exactly like your guy.
Yeah.
Really often feel sympathy at the poker table, but I did hear.
God, what a great description.
I wouldn't feel too sympathetic towards this guy. I mean, if he really thinks he's just playing like a gambling game, then he's just doing what he's doing, you know. He's not getting his ROI that he gets from blackjack, but yeah, I think there's other people to feel bad for at the poker table, and this doesn't sound like one to me. Just, I wouldn't feel too bad. Also, important to note is that he did raise the river in an earlier hand with the goods, so he does know that action is available to him. That sounds really mean to say it like that, but it wasn't clear before that, as he usually just asks on every street, how much do I have to put in to call?
Oh, man, I would have a hard time keeping a straight face if someone literally said that.
Okay. Correspondent goes on to the hand. Okay, so to recap. The short stacker, the table gamer, are effective $850 stacks. I mean, the cutoff, short stacker on the button, table gamer on the small blind. Okay, correspondent writes, I'm dealt 3-3 and the action folds to me. I make my standard raise to $10 and both villains call. Okay, let's talk about this, because...
Yeah, I think this is a limp, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because you got it.
So, in a regular game, I think, especially from late position, middle and late position, it's probably right to open all pocket pairs if you're playing with some good players, and it's important to be able to represent all the sets, and you also have some fold equity pre-flop. And in this situation, when you're never taking it down pre-flop, I think it makes sense just to get in cheap and play in position with more money behind. When you hit your set, this guy's obviously going to... You can just basically put in all the money before the river, it sounds like. I think... I just don't see any reason to raise a hand like threes where you're going to have to basically check it down most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to play like the super high variance, like threes are better than the average hand, and I'm just going to like put in a bunch of money against this guy because he's probably just going to call with anything. And I think that's a reasonable game to play, but... it just depends on what your bankroll is.
Yeah. I mean, now that we're talking about it for a little bit, let's not say it's... There might be a good argument for raising just because, you know, you're really deep with the table games guy, and there's, like, a lot of value, and even when you're not playing that high variance game, of just, like, having the pot be bigger to start when you have a set, you know? That being said, if this guy is really, is like, how much do I need to call and never folds a flop in the turn... Well, that's not necessary because then you just like overbet the shit.
Yeah,
out
you just start. You just put in like $80 on the flop, and then
and just shove the 300.
Yeah. No, I don't think raising is bad. I just think like saying that you make your standard raise $10 is limping should be considered. And threes, you know, might not be the hand to limp. I think it probably is, but there are going to be some hands that it's just not worth raising at this point.
I want to be playing a very wide range of hands in position deep against the small blind.
Yes, and I think it's a good habit to get over the I'm a good player, I don't limp from late position.
Yeah, and always consider your options because I think the button is like very rarely 3-betting us, but when it happens, it's not ideal. And I think that if we limp and the button raises, that gives us actually a lot of information about
definitely.
That person's range. And then we, you know, not just with pocket pairs, but maybe even with like, you know, like a 10-8 suited, now we'll be able to just more effectively semi-bluff and get value and just play well against a player that doesn't want to lose his hard-earned profit. So,
right.
Man, I wish I was there. This sounds like a lot of fun.
Sounds like a great game. Okay, but Hero does make a $10 raise, which is definitely fine. And both the villains call. So we're going to go see the flop three ways with the short stacker on the button and the table game on the small blind. Our villain writes, immediately I have the short stacker on pocket pairs and suited broadways at worst. He's still racking his chips and counting them over and over. I gather it's his best day ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a reasonable read. I mean, on the button for $10, like, I wouldn't be shocked if someone wants to play a hand like 7-8 suited.
Well, he was saying suited connectors. I mean,
he said suited broadways. Pocket pairs and suited broadways at worst.
Oh, yeah. He's probably playing 7-8, maybe even like 7-9.
Because on the button.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this guy can be a lot of different ways. It could be like I'm only playing like a really tight range pre-flop and like never putting in money post-flop when I don't think I'm really good. Or it could be like it's $10, I'm on the button, and I might only put in money when I'm really good post-flop, but I'll put in money now with 6-8 suited and see what happens.
Yeah.
So.
And I also think like this could very easily be his last hand. A lot of times
people play to
their button. And if this is his last hand, then I don't think it's necessarily like he paid the blinds to play his button so he could just fold 7-8 suited. That's just my hunch.
Yeah.
And TG's range is, as far as I can tell, literally any two cards, and that sounds right. Okay. And so we go to the flop with $30 after rake, and the flop comes down 3 of hearts, jack of clubs, queen of diamonds.
So we basically flop the nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think already our plan is just to shovel money into this pot.
Yeah. So the small blind checks, I assume?
Okay. I read this hand without reading, read through parts of this hand without reading the full description at the beginning. And we're getting some conflicting information right here. We have that the short stacker donks $30 into the pot.
Yeah, do you want to double check that description? See where the...
We definitely have that the short stacker is on the button and that the table gamer is in the small blind. And we have that the table gamer, as is discussed, and asks how much and then calls. So I'm just going to guess they're in the blinds.
Okay. Doesn't change much. Yeah.
Short stacker is in the small blind. So maybe he's going to be playing a little bit tighter than we thought. I guess I could get behind more so the Broadway hands.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Pairs, if you're playing from the small blind. And the table gamer is probably in the big blind. Okay. Short stacker donks $30 in the pot. Oh, by the way, that makes me like limping even a little bit more against a random opponent on the button, since I think a random opponent is more likely to 3-bet than either of these opponents.
Okay. Yeah. Or, you know,
just be a good player on the button and call at a higher frequency and make our life difficult out of position with threes.
Yeah.
So, yes, that makes me like limping more. Okay. So the short stacker let out $30 in the pot, and the table gamer asks how much and then calls. Our correspondent writes, I was not sure what to do here, as I'd rarely seen the short stacker lead like this, if ever. I thought he could possibly have jack-jack in his range, but my estimation was that he would have almost certainly 3-bet queens pre-flop. I've also removed aces and kings from his range based on seeing the aces 3-bet hand, but that could be risky given how extreme his passive play could be. And I'm assuming that he thinks that the table gamer could have basically anything here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is just, you know, despite the fact that you've never seen this player lead money, put money into the pot, and that's likely strong, you just have way too strong of a hand to do anything but raise. I think, like, against this player with the effective stack of, like, 800, like, you know, there's definitely some runouts with some actions that I'm folding at some point, but this is not the time to be doing anything other than like trying to get max value from both of these players.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this is one of those spots where you should be happy to give the short stacker $800 if he has jacks here. You know, he earned
well,
it.
If
the table gamer folds and I'm not saying that in any run out, any scenario, like any sort of betting pattern, we're going to do that, but we should definitely consider that, like, because of this scenario where we have a player who's going to be playing almost any two cards and just putting in money with any two cards basically until the river,
that
not only would we expect to lose a lot of money when we were set over set, but in this situation where we have a huge incentive to put money in the pot before the river, you just have to, like, accept it. And that, if the short stacker 3-bets the flop, that's, like, I think the one scenario where maybe we get let off the hook, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, you know, where it's, like, if the short stacker 3-bets the flop or, like, calls the flop and, like, check raises huge on a blank turn, like, I think given this, like, very apt and detailed description that I would definitely consider folding. It's really hard to say not being there. I feel like, you know, being there against someone in this position who's about to rack up, probably on his biggest winning day, as our correspondent put it, you know, I think I could definitely, you know, consider that exploitative fold. That's all the point that I want to make, is that, you know, we should be trying to get value on this flop, but that it's not, given the stack depth and kind of the extreme description of this player, and 100% we're getting our money in almost always.
Yeah. A couple of points. One, I actually don't think it's that likely that he has a set. I think a lot of marginal hands are more likely to lead out here. Just try and sort of take it down. And sets generally have a little bit more patience, especially on not a particularly scary board. Especially if we haven't talked that much about your image other than that you could have any two cards, but if he thinks you're the type of player to c-bet a lot, I think a lot of times the sets will go for the check raise. Yeah, if you get a 3-bet on the flop, I think we can part with it. But it's based on, like, what I think sizing should look like, it's going to be really hard to get away from this hand in any situation where you don't get 3-bet on the flop.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think the question here is really just sizing.
And I think, you know, our sizing, because we have the big blind who's never folding, our question really is, like, how much, like, what are we value targeting from the small blind, and what do we think this player will call with that, and balancing that against the fact that the big blind will likely call with anything that he called with before. And I truly think that this might be a spot where we really shouldn't be value targeting, like, you know, queen X from the small blind, because he's just wanting an excuse to maybe, like, fold those hands. I think we should just be trying to get max value from kind of the any two cards player.
I actually disagree. I think we should getting value on the turn from the any two cards player is going to be really easy. I do think that there are hands the small blind is going to have, like ace queen, that have extremely bad equity against us and are likely to put in more money in the pot if we bet correctly. And at least with this flop raise, I think we should have the goal of getting called by both players.
Yeah, I don't know. Based on the description of this player, this seems like the type of guy who, like, a lot of his leading range is, like, pairs of queens, pairs of jacks, where if he faces a raise from you, he'll probably just fold those hands because, you know, he's booked a big profit, there's a lot of money behind, and doesn't want to find himself in a tough spot. That seems like the type of player this guy is. And given the description that this big blind is calling almost any two cards, I think we want to potentially set up a shoving situation on the turn. Maybe, you know, push the limit of does he fold the turn ever. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, well, yeah, we're just missing on way too much value given that, you know, very specific read that this guy never folds on the flop or the turn. So I think we want to be raising to, you know, in like the 250 to 350 range and shoving the turn.
Yeah, I think that's just too big, and I'll tell you why. One, we have that the table gamer calls like 90% of the time. I think 95 to 99% of bets are going to be smaller, both in terms of relative size and absolute size, to like a $350 raise here. And, you know, let's not pretend that the table gamer doesn't know that he can fold. Like, he knows. He sees people. He's seeing people fold. He knows he can fold. He might still decide to call. I still think, like, if we make it 350, we're getting called sometimes by just, like, absolute trash. I'm not saying that, like, it's never going to work. But I do think it's worth hedging against the possibility that this is going to be, we're going to trigger, you know, something in those 10% of situations where we get the table gamer to fold, and also just give up on getting any value from the short stacker by making it 350. I think making it something like 175, the short stacker is still going to be tempted to call. We know the short stack's leaving, but we don't know that he's never going to put in any more money with ace queen. I think that's too big of a leap to say he's never going to put in any more money. And if we get called by, you know, 175 by the table gamer, then I think we can just shove the turn anyway. And if our read was right that he would call 350 on the flop with basically two cards, then I think if he puts in 175 on the top flop, he's just going to put in the rest on the turn anyways.
I can get behind that. So we're doing 175 to then, like, make a big overbet shove on the turn.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, if we're going to put in 350 on the flop, like, I think that's a much bigger overbet than putting in 600 on the turn.
You're right. Okay, I can get behind this. I guess in my mind, I was thinking, like, this guy never folds flop ever, and then maybe if he was considering folding turn, he wouldn't, because it wouldn't be such a big overbet, where, you know, he's also probably never faced such a massive overbet on the flop. I don't know. This is a really tough. It's a tough question how to get max value here, but I can get behind what you're suggesting.
So I'll go on with what our correspondent writes. I decide after maybe 20 seconds to raise to $90 for two main reasons. First and foremost, I believe almost whatever I bet will come along as near-dead money from the table gamer. Second, I figure that the short stacker is not leading with the hand he won't call with, and the part of his value range that I'm beating, queen-jack, ace-jack, ace-queen, outweighs the jacks and maybe queens he could have. Also, if I raise to a very large amount, over $100, the table gamer might fold. The table rarely has hands this big, and even he would fold sometimes. Lastly, the short stacker is literally never bluffing here, like 0%. I know that sounds crazy, but I'm locked into that part of my read. 0% bluff. If anything, I'm a little worried I'm behind. Both players call, creating a pot of about $300 going into the turn. I think Zach and I both agree that the problem with this sizing is that, well, one, if you have some reason to think that the table gamer would call 100 but not more, then sure, bet 100. But based on what we've said, I don't think there's going to be that big of a difference between 100 and like 175 or so. And I think the risky part of this bet, in my mind, is if the short stack is going to play very tight against this bet. And I think if we, based on how the short or how the table gamer plays, we just really don't want to end up here with like only $180 or $200 on the turn.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a little greedy, and maybe we're sort of overestimating the read that you gave us was slightly overestimated or slightly overrepresented in the description. It was a very entertaining description, and so maybe we have a slightly inaccurate view of things. And yeah. I could definitely see 90 being a solid raise, but I do think, based on what you said, that it should be larger. And obviously Zach thinks it should be larger because his first instinct was to make it 350, which I think is maybe a better size than 90. Okay. I'm gauging by the call that the short stacker very often has ace queen or queen jack.
Okay.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's just a question of how often. But yeah, I think those two hands probably make up more than 50% of his range. I would want to say that.
Yeah. I think jacks are possible. I think king-queen is possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, queens are possible too. Aces-kings are possible, but less likely, I think. I also wouldn't be surprised if he... We haven't really talked about him three-betting jacks pre-flop, but I wouldn't be surprised. A lot of players three-bet jacks because they don't know what else to do. And it would be correct in this spot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. The turn is a deuce of hearts, creating a badoogie board and changing nothing in terms of where I am in the hand.
A badoogie board? Well, our listener said it was a three of hearts initially, for what it's worth.
Man, the inconsistencies are piling up here.
Yeah, we love the description, but definitely double-checking.
Yeah, you got to make sure the positions are right. We don't mind if flush draws come out that don't matter, but...
It might matter later, but probably not. Let's say there may or may not be a flush draw now, and we'll see if it comes into play.
Slightly more than three-quarters of the time. It's going to be not relevant. Or at least on the river it won't be. Well, that's not true. I'm getting nitpicky in terms of, like, being detailed. It's a bad habit. Okay. Badoogie board. Okay, the short stacker leads into the pot again for $100, which was very alarming to me. The table gamer calls awkwardly again, and now I really start to think. I give the short stacker a very small chance that he has king-10, but given his check call passive ways all night, I really don't think he's drawing at all. I think he might have queen-queen in his range, definitely has jacks, might have kings, has ace-jack suited, all of the ace-queen, and maybe all the queen-jack and king-queen. I know it seems overly narrow. I don't think it seems overly narrow, by the way, especially since...
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description of this guy's range, yeah.
But I'm seriously discounting his line here with ace-jack and king-queen. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I agree. My gut tells me queen-jack is the bottom of his double donk range. I think it's true, it's reasonable that queen-jack would be the bottom of his double donk range.
Yeah, but he also is, I think, just three-betting the sets on some percentage of the time on the flop and check-raising them on the turn, you know? Like, I think this betting out seems like a good value hand, but that maybe potentially needs a little more protection.
Yeah, I agree. I also think... there are some players, and I played with one last night, who will donk and call, and then donk and call again with their nutted hands. They just don't really
ever... That's you?
No. No, actually, thinking about it, I bet and he raised and on a pretty dry heavy board, and because he had played stronger hands more passively, I thought he was probably drawing. I also had top pair top kicker, and he was pretty short, but he had it. Anyway, yeah, I definitely don't think we should discount Jack. We should discount Jacks and Queens, yes, but they're still very much present. I think we both agree on that.
Yeah. Okay. I think this is a must raise again.
Yeah, I agree. So do you think we should just shove?
This is the question. I think a raise is the problem is you really don't want to be bet folding against the small blind.
No, I don't think we're bet folding here against
the small blind. So if we're not bet folding, then we're shoving. So yeah, we're shoving. Mm-hmm. That being said, I don't know. It's like maybe not, because I could see a scenario where the small blind has queen jack a lot of the time and folds to a shove and calls a $350 bet, and the big blind folds to a shove and calls a $350 raise or something. It's kind of tricky.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the fact that we're not bet folding doesn't really matter very much. I think we should probably just, obviously, I just think this is a time to focus more on
big blind.
What you think, yeah, the big blind is going to be willing to call.
Yeah, you're right. Because we are, you know, something important, we are good the majority of the time against the small blind. Sometimes we are not, but, you know, that's some of the variance in poker, you know? It's not just variance in terms of, like, you know, we get in as an 80%. We can get it in basically drawing dead, but knowing that happens a minority of the time. It doesn't feel good, but, you know, that's the game.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. It's really tough to tell just, like, what this big blind's going to be calling. We said he's never folded the turn, but he probably hasn't faced, like, you know, just massive amounts of pressure and just, like, very strong holdings. We have two players that are pretty deep that are putting a lot of money into the pot, and he's probably perceptive of that on maybe some level. Maybe that's too generous. I don't know.
Yeah. I think one potential benefit of the shove is if the short stacker ever folds jacks, like, which I don't think is, like, totally out of the question.
Yeah. Man, that would, like, I would feel amazing if I got jacks to fold and
snapped off by, like,
E10 offsuit, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is really a question of what is big blind doing. I don't know. I think I don't like the shove. I think I like raising to, like, 400 something. I think that just ensures a call from the big blind, and then also has the benefit of makes it a lot more likely that the small blind will call with queen jack. Exactly. So.
Yeah, I like that. I like 300 or 400. I don't even hate. I know we sort of wrote off bet folding, but I don't hate it. If we bet 300, get shoved on, the big blind folds, and, you know, we have 400 to call.
I guess do you guys think this guy is ever shoving with queen jack? No, right?
Probably not.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I might like a smaller sizing in terms of bet folding.
Yeah.
Like, we definitely can't go above, I think, 300 if we're going to be bet folding.
No, so I think 300 is kind of the move.
Yeah, maybe 350, but...
All right.
Yeah, a little under pot size raise. Okay, what did our friend do?
So our correspondent writes, I'm honestly quite confused at this point. I know I have the third nuts on this board, but something doesn't seem right. I just call with the plan to likely get the remaining 600 or so in on the river, unless it's a queen or a jack. So after my call, there's about $600 in the pot.
So let's just talk about that for a second. Yeah. Like, if your plan is to get it in, as long as a queen or a jack doesn't come, then you should put the money in now to get max value from, you know, queen jack from the small blind and from any two cards from the big blind.
Yeah, agreed.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, unless you have plans to fold to a river bet from the short stacker, which I don't think is crazy, but I think...
Yeah, yeah.
I just think you're going to have a better expectation raising the flop and maximizing the scenario when the small blind has a queen jack hand or worse, and you can get more value from the big blind. So the river is a nine of clubs completing only king 10. My read is that I have king 10, the short stacker has zero king 10, and the table gamer has whatever the preflop frequency distribution says about King 10. and I, yeah, okay, I'm not going to doubt that too much. I think that's probably close to true. Like, I don't know if the table gamer is putting in this much money in the pot with, like, seven, it's like 6-7 offsuit on this board. But we'll say certainly table gamer could have King 10.
And he has King 10, a very small minority of the time, and I think the small blind almost never has it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that relatively so. Okay. The short stacker leads for $75. Okay. This is the point in the hand where you're just like, I win.
Yeah, I have the best hand.
Yeah.
If he has jacks here, like, God bless this person.
The fact that he's leading for him has meant strength, but now I'm baffled. I think he's scared of King 10, but also has a good hand himself. The table gamer calls, and I rule out him having King 10. I wouldn't, but it doesn't really matter. Now, I go into the tank. I debate just calling, thinking that I'm not getting any action from Queen Jack, the occasional Ace Queen that the short stacker might have. But after the table gamer passively calls, there's 700 in the pot, and I decide to shove for the remaining $600 effective. And yeah.
I think the shove is definitely reasonable once you get to this point. But just because you've seen the guy big blind fold on the river before, and I think 75 very much looks like a blocking bet with like a value hand that's worse than yours. I think it's just better to make it like 300 something here, 400 something, and just like ensure a call from a big blind.
Yeah, I also think there's definitely something to, I'm normally not huge on like this sort of metagame stuff that's not really grounded in anything, but I do think there's something to betting around the amount where if the short stacker loses the pot, he still has whatever the buy-in was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, yeah, I think making it like 400 is probably the move here. Although I think shoving is way better than flatting.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, so our correspondent writes, I do this for the following reasons. One, I have a good chance of getting it all from the table gamer. Yes, definitely. Two, the short stacker might see this as bluffy and call with ace queen. I think this is fairly unlikely, especially since the main bluff just got there.
Yeah.
But our correspondent writes, but realistically, the lowest and perhaps only value target I have with him is queen jack. And I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Which is part of why I like our size of like 400 better. And three, there's an outside chance I'm behind, but after taking out at least most of the queens from the short stacker's range, there just aren't too many combos where I lose $600. And yeah, that's definitely true. But really, we should just be worrying about max value here. And I think, like Zach and I said, we just think that you're going to get more value from a $400 bet, just very disproportionately for sort of strange reasons, and you know, things that we've experienced in our times playing low stakes poker.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I haven't read the results.
Let's reveal. I want to know.
Oh yes. I definitely want to know. The short stacker goes into the tank forever. I actually think I might be behind at this point. I wouldn't be surprised if you were. After maybe 3 or 4 minutes, he said, if I fold, can I show my hand after? Dealer agrees to muck his hand in a way he can show. Now I'm almost certain I'm behind.
Yeah.
Eventually, both players fold, and the short stack shows jack-jack, and I smile and say, that is a pretty big laydown. Another guy down the hand proudly announces that he knows exactly what I have. I show one of my threes, and short stack racks up his remaining chips and leaves. Yeah.
Well, in many ways, our correspondent got max value out of this hand. Yeah, he played the way for the maximum expectation, even if we didn't recommend it. So, well done.
I actually think that is a more compelling reason to shove than the second or third reasons you gave. I think it's pretty easy to say that
in hindsight, you know.
No, but I would have definitely said like that if you shove 600, there's a chance that the short stacker folds jacks. just for the same mental reason, he doesn't want to like turn a big win into a loss, that he would maybe call with queen jack for 400, but as we've learned, would almost certainly fold for 600.
Yeah.
And I think if you say the reason I'm shoving is because I think there's a chance I can get, if I don't think the short stacker is likely to call anything really, and if I can get him to fold jacks, it's a huge, huge win.
Yeah.
And the table gamer might be fairly insensitive to bet sizing. I'm not sure. And so I'm just going to go for it. I think that's a pretty compelling case to shove. I still like 400 better because my feeling at this point in the hand was that jacks were quite unlikely. Especially, I think queen jack was more likely. And there's more combinations of queen jack to begin with. So, yeah, I'm sticking by our line. But I do think I definitely would have thought that 600 would maybe get jacks to fold, and that's a pretty good reason to bet 600.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to say that that's going to happen a good percentage of the time. And we should be more concerned based on all the bet sizing tells that we picked up on before, that he's more likely to not have a hand like jacks and try to get value from that hand. So I don't think it, you know, hearing about this result makes it a shove. I think after we've played this hand, now we would, you know, play the hand very differently, but
yeah. Yeah, I don't think... I agree. All right. Correspondent wraps up. A couple things. Anything else important that you didn't tell us? So, ... All hindsight aside, am I crazy? Am I accidentally merging with a river shove? I haven't run the math, but how certain do I need to be on my reads to make that the best line? I don't think I can ever fool the river, but can I ever just call the weak $75 bet? Thanks, guys, and hope that was enough info to make for an interesting hand. Yes, it was. Definitely enough info for an interesting hand. Thank you very much for that again. Like I just said, I wouldn't think you were crazy for merging against an unknown player who's unlikely to play well and a player who has a high propensity to put in a lot of money with basically nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I definitely don't think you're crazy. You're playing against two very, very different ranges, and the same bet could accomplish something like getting one of the players to fold the best hand while getting the other player to call with the worst hand. And that's actually fairly common when you have a good grasp that someone is drawing in the hand and you make a bet to try and get them to call with their draw with sort of a weaker value hand and try and get a better value hand to fold. We had a player who actually did that to Zach, made him fold the better Zach value hand in one of our early episodes.
Oh, I remember that hand now. Yeah, I remember that. What, I folded like top pair, like it's like a pair of jacks or something, right?
Yeah, some nothing like too
great. Oh, it was a good fold, like given the information, but it was like a very good play by an unknown.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think you're crazy with the ripper shove and having two separate goals, but it sounded like it was more of a value play, and for that reason, I think the smaller sizing is probably better. Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I think that once you get to the river the way you did, I think like a raise to around the 300 to 400 mark is the move, because I think the big blind, based on what we know, is going to call, even if he only calls 23% of the time, that's calling 23% of the time where he's, you know, losing 90-something% of the time. And I think based on the bet sizing, you know, Jack and I agree that the small blind most of the time has a hand that is worse than pocket threes. So I think we should be trying to get value.
A last note, the table gamer mumbles something about having aces, but I neither heard nor fully believed him.
That's, he doesn't seem like the type of guy to fold aces.
He doesn't seem like the type of guy to one fold aces or two to lie about having aces.
Yeah.
Lying about having aces, I think, shows a level of intelligence about the game that's not been demonstrated so far.
So maybe he did. I don't know.
Maybe he had aces and folded, which would be...
I mean, yeah, maybe, like our correspondent said, maybe he was just playing this weird table game where, like, he only had the option of folding on the river and actually, like, knew about poker a little bit, just didn't know the option of folding before the river. Given, I don't know if that's being charitable or not.
No, I think that's impossible.
No, it is. I'm joking.
I also think this also kind of shows like when a short stacker has a big session and is playing from the rack, you should abuse him with bluffs.
Yeah.
Which is not something we really needed to talk about since we had threes. But obviously, like, if we had King 10 here, we would be really putting on the pressure early in a situation where we weren't playing with someone who was going to call with almost any two cards. Mm-hmm. And even against that player, actually, I think we would just be putting on the pressure and then just ripping it on the river no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And any final thoughts?
Nope. Thanks for the interesting hand, and keep those deep stack crazy situations from Louisiana coming in.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, man.